Now we need to talk about genetically modified organisms, which are becoming more and more common nowadays. You eat them all the time, or you eat products that come from them all the time. A genetically modified organism, or a GMO, is just exactly what this phrase says. It's an organism that has been genetically modified, which means the DNA, which is what makes up the genes, have somehow been modified with biotechnological techniques to be different from the DNA that that kind of organism naturally has. So this produces organisms that you would not encounter in nature. Now, notice that this is distinct from genetic modification that's accomplished just by breeding methods, which has been done for thousands of years. Remember, early on we defined breeding in agriculture as biotechnology, right? Because we are intervening. We're interfering with the organism somehow to produce a product. That is, by definition, biotechnology. So, interfering with either plants or animals and how they breed by farming or by raising certain animals, that is genetic modification, because you are determining the parents. They might not actually meet and mate in nature, right? So that is actually genetic modification, but we don't consider those to be genetically modified organisms. GMOs are recent things produced by modern molecular techniques, actually directly manipulating the DNA rather than just manipulating who mates with whom. All right, well, they're made for a lot of different reasons, but and some of those we talked about last time when we talked about transgenesis in animals. But the most controversial use of them right now is using them as foods, which is why they're in the news. The news rarely talks about genetically modified organisms that are used for research. The reason GMOs are in the news is because people want labeling, for instance. They want to know that the food that they're eating is genetically modified, so they're fighting for labeling, things like that. That's why it's controversial. So we need to distinguish between two different processes that can produce genetically modified organisms, and those are transgenesis and cisgenesis. And we've already talked about transgenesis because the last lecture was about transgenesis in animals. What does transgenesis refer to? What does it mean? It is a transfer of genes, but so is cisgenesis, which I haven't talked about yet. So what is more specific? What's the rest of the transgenesis definition? It's transfer of a gene, but so is mating. And if I inseminate a woman, that's transfer of my genes, but that's not transgenesis. That's involved, but when there's a transfer, that means there's a transfer from somewhere to somewhere, right? In transgenesis, it's a transfer of a gene from some organism to some unrelated organism. All right? Transgenesis is an example of horizontal gene transfer, as it's called. The reason it's called horizontal gene transfer is to distinguish it from what we call vertical gene transfer, which still doesn't make sense probably to you. But what we define as vertical gene transfer is traditional reproduction. It's vertical gene transfer if genes are transferred from a parent to its offspring. that's considered to be vertical, right? Parents on the top, children on the bottom, and then grandchildren below that, and so on. Or it doesn't have to be animals. It could be any organism. That's vertical gene transfer. Horizontal gene transfer is moving genes from one organism to another organism that already exists, not an offspring. All right? And so do you see that transgenesis qualifies as horizontal gene transfer? Because you're taking a gene out of one organism, putting it into another organism that's already, it's already there. It's not an offspring of that original organism. But there's really two different ways to do horizontal gene transfer. One is transgenesis, which, like I said, is transferring that gene to some unrelated organism, a different species. Not only a different species, but a completely different species. Like when you make the pig glow, right? That's taking a gene from a jellyfish, putting it into a pig. Jellyfish and pigs are not very highly related species. So that's transgenesis. Cisgenesis, on the other hand, is the same process. The only difference is that the organism that you transfer the gene to is highly related to the one you took it from. So, for instance, if you're working with corn, as an example, which is most corn that we eat nowadays is genetically modified, if you take a gene from one corn plant and put it into a different kind of corn, but it's still corn, that's cisgenesis rather than transgenesis. So the only difference between the two is how related the two organisms involved are. But they're both examples of horizontal gene transfer because it's not simply reproduction. The gene is not transferred from parent to offspring. It's transferred from organism to already existing organism. Okay, let's go to slide 2. I just distinguished between vertical and horizontal gene transfer, so I'm not going to define those again. But I'm sure you already recognize horizontal gene transfer methods as being unnatural, right? When we take the jellyfish gene and put it into a pig, that's not a natural process. But horizontal gene transfer also can happen naturally. Now, obviously, vertical gene transfer happens naturally, right? That's just what reproduction is. Horizontal gene transfer also can happen naturally, though, particularly between bacteria. So bacteria can reproduce by splitting into two, right? The original bacterium splits into two bacteria. That's vertical gene transfer, because first it copies its chromosome, then it gives one copy to each of the two offspring. That's vertical gene transfer. But bacteria can also transfer plasmids. Remember plasmids? The little pieces of DNA? From one bacterium to another bacterium that already exists, not the offspring. In other words, bacteria, when they come into contact, can swap a little bit of DNA. So that's an example of horizontal gene transfer. But it's occurring naturally. It's not biotechnological horizontal gene transfer. But they can also, both, of course, be done biotechnologically. We can intervene for vertical gene transfer because we can help parents conceive, right? But we can also use biotechnological methods for horizontal gene transfer, either transgenesis or cisgenesis, which is how we produce genetically modified organisms, GMOs. Okay, so we have four different mechanisms for horizontal gene transfer that can occur. conjugation is almost like sex for bacteria. What I was just talking about a moment ago, the transfer of plasmids, or the transfer of a plasmid from one bacterium to another bacterium, that occurs by the method called conjugation. So the bacterium that has the plasmid produces a little hair-like structure called a pilus. Pilus means hair. It's not really hair, though. It's really a tiny tube. And it has its own circular chromosome, but it also has a plasmid in it. And that pilus, or conjugation tube, connects to another bacterium, and the plasmid gets strung through here, and so now the recipient has the plasmid. So it's not really mating, but they do come together and exchange genetic material. Yeah.
Do they both have the plasmid, or just...
No, only the donor has the plasmid, but once they conjugate, then they both do. Because a plasmid, just like a chromosome, just like any DNA molecule, is really double-stranded, so there's two pieces, right? One of those, the two pieces separate. One strand goes into the recipient bacterium, the other strand stays behind, and then each strand is copied, so now both bacteria have the plasmid. And so now that this one, which was the recipient, has a plasmid, it can be a donor and give it to someone else. That's conjugation. Transduction involves a virus. Do you remember what bacteriophage means?
Yeah.
What is it? It is something that, well, yeah, phage means eat, but although there's really no eating involved. That's just the name. But it's something that attacks what?
A bacteria.
Bacteria, and what is that something that attacks bacteria?
Virus.
Right, virus. A bacteriophage is not a bacterium. A bacteriophage is a virus that attacks bacteria. But what is a virus as far as molecules are concerned? Yeah, a virus is just a piece of DNA and some protein that encapsulate that DNA. So when a virus infects a bacterium, it attaches to the surface and injects its DNA into the bacterium, right? Well, that DNA has genes on it. Genes are part of the DNA. So that's gene transfer. And obviously it's horizontal gene transfer because it's not from parent to offspring, it's from virus to bacterium. But that's called transduction. There is also transformation, and this refers to uptake by bacteria of naked DNA in the surroundings. So there's not two cells involved here. One cell takes up DNA, that bacterium takes up DNA that just happens to be in the immediate surroundings. And so what probably happened is that another cell died and burst open, spilling its own DNA out into the environment. So this is just naked DNA that happens to be trash in the environment. That, under the right circumstances, a bacterium can take that up into itself and claim it as its own DNA. So bacteria can change their traits by taking on this extra DNA, by all three of these methods, not just transformation. But that's what transformation is. And then we can also use what are called gene transfer agents, which are very similar to viruses. in the way they act. We produce these in a certain genus of bacteria called alpha proteobacteria. Actually, this is not a genus. It's bigger than a genus. But it includes a genus called agrobacteria, which is why that's in italics and capitalized. It's a genus. So there are several species of agrobacteria, but those are the ones that we use that to do the job of transferring genes from the bacterium, the agrobacteria, to plants. Agro refers to plants, right? Well, these agrobacteria are named that because they infect plants. And when they do, DNA can be transferred from the bacterium to the plant cells. So this happens naturally, but we take advantage of that. We use these agrobacteria basically as a way to get genes that we're interested in getting into the plants, into the plants. They just do the work for us. All right. Let's look at some pictures then. Slide 4 shows you conjugation. So the red double circle here is the bacterial chromosome. That includes all of its absolutely necessary genes. A plasmid is a smaller piece of circular DNA, and it includes genes also. Right? We've talked about plasmids. We did talk about plasmids, didn't we?
Yeah,
we did. These are extra genes, basically, that can give it extra abilities, but not absolutely necessary abilities, which is why this one that doesn't have a plasmid is also a perfectly viable bacterium. It has no problem living because it has its own chromosome. But this pilus, which is a tube, can be a connection point between this donor and the recipient, and one of those two strands gets put into the recipient. And it doesn't matter which strand, right? Why does it not matter? They're complementary. So each one serves as a template for how to make the other one. So for a moment, both of them have just one strand, but then they use that one strand as a template to build the other strand, and now they have a full plasmid each, and they're exact copies of each other. So now this thing is no longer called a recipient. It's a new donor, because like I said earlier, it's able to conjugate with another recipient and pass it on. This, by the way, is how bacterial resistance to antibiotics occurs, like we saw in the movie. These extra abilities that plasmids carry, the genes that give them the extra abilities, an example of that would be resistance to an antibiotic. And that can spread from bacterium to bacterium, which is why you always want to make sure you kill all the bacteria by taking the antibiotics after you still feel okay. Take it for until they're gone, because it was prescribed a certain course of antibiotics to keep going to get rid of all those ones that are hanging on. You don't want any of them to survive, because they might mutate and pass on resistance. Okay, slide 5 shows you transduction. Remember I said that involves a virus. So this is what a bacteriophage looks like. This is really just the capsule. So this is just the leftover protein a moment before it infected it, that this DNA was inside the capsule. But it's just the DNA that gets injected into the bacterium. And the reason that the virus does this, of course, is because that's how it reproduces. But since the virus to begin with is only DNA and protein, injecting the protein into the bacterium is going to end up making new viruses, because the genes on the DNA, well, first of all, the DNA that's injected can then be replicated by the cell, right? DNA in general can be replicated. So you make many copies of DNA. Each copy of DNA is the DNA part of a new virus. But also the DNA has genes on it. The genes code for how to make proteins, right? In this case, it's the proteins that it makes are the capsules that are the other parts of the virus. So now you have DNA and capsules, which means you can package them together to make new viruses. And eventually there's so many in there that they burst the cell open. So they use the bacterium just as a cell, because they don't have their own cell, as basically a factory to make new viruses, and then once they spill out, they can go infect other ones. This is how it happens naturally. But if we can use this process for biotechnological purposes, we will and do. So we design viruses with the DNA that we want to get into the bacterium and just let the virus infect bacteria. Now the bacterium has the DNA. All right. Transformation is shown in slide 6. That's, remember, uptake of just naked DNA. So these pieces of DNA that are not within a cell here used to be in a cell, but this cell died and burst open. So now these are just fragments of DNA happen to be in the surroundings of this other bacterium. And usually transformation doesn't occur. The conditions have to be just right. But if the conditions are just right, then this bacterium can take up some of this DNA, like you see this AB strand came in, and under the right circumstances, that fragment can actually even be incorporated into its own chromosome. So now this basically is like a different bacterium because it has different genetic components. But it also can, what's taken up can actually form a plasmid and stay separate from the chromosome. Either way, the bacterium has extra abilities because it has extra DNA. But it can be incorporated into the chromosome or not. And you see all three of these bacterial gene transfer mechanisms in slide 7. Transformation, see this one is dying, spilling out its DNA. Conjugation, there's a pilus forming, plasmids being transferred from one bacterium to another. And transduction involves the virus. So those are the definitions. And we can use these for our own purposes to get genes into bacteria. The fourth one, though, gene transfer agents, is a little bit different, even though it still involves a bacterium. This is slide 8. This involves the agrobacteria that I was talking about. Specifically, this one is called Agrobacterium tumefaciens. That's the genus and species name. And it naturally occurs. It naturally infects plant cells. That's how it operates. So this thing is one plant cell. But when the bacterium infects it, it ends up transferring its DNA to the plant DNA. So now this plant has extra genes. All right? And that's going to cause formation of a gall, which is a tumor, a plant tumor, made out of cells that have that new DNA in it. And this is how it naturally occurs. But we intervene by saying, well, we'll let this bacterium do the job of getting DNA we want to be in the plant cell into the plant cell. So we molecularly design, genetically engineer a plasmid and then put that into the bacterium. For instance, we can use transformation to cause that bacterium to take up that plasmid as naked DNA. Now we have a bacterium that has a gene in it that we're interested in getting into the plant, and then we just let this agrobacterium infect the plant. Now the gene that we designed the plasmid to have is in the plant's DNA. And it's going to start growing this tumor. We take some cells from this tumor and one thing about plants is that they have totipotents, just like stem cells, embryonic stem cells. So you can take just a few cells from this tumor, and since they came from the tumor, they have to be cells that have the new gene in them, because that's what caused them to become tumorous. And you grow them in the laboratory into what can then into a little immature plant that can be planted, and now it grows into a mature plant, and every one of those cells has the new gene in it. This is how we make genetically modified plants, like the corn plants you're eating. All right, so they what the gene does depends on what we want it to do, right? There are genes for pesticide resistance, resistance to pests themselves, so that you don't have to spray them with pesticide. They just naturally, or not naturally, because of this new gene, will not be invaded by the pests, things like that. Grow bigger, ripen quicker, whatever. But that's the use of gene transfer agents. Now, slide 9, which is the last slide, shows you in pictures the difference between transgenesis and cisgenesis, and the difference between both of those compared to conventional breeding. You see, conventional breeding takes a lot longer, and it's kind of a crapshoot. In conventional breeding, what you do, both of these double bars that you see in different colors correspond, they represent DNA, pieces of DNA. Right, so two strands. So the current cultivar is what you have, the kind of plant that you have to work with right now. You're not completely satisfied with it. You notice that a wild relative, something that's similar, but that isn't suitable either, something about that wild relative, one trait, is something you'd like to have in your current cultivar, but keep the rest of the cultivar the same. That's what's represented by the blue dots. That's a beneficial gene that you notice in another organism that's otherwise unsuitable. So your idea is to get this beneficial gene into the current cultivar's collection of genes so that you can make a plant that's even better. So what you do is cross them, right? They're relatives, so they can be bred, they can be crossed. And that's going to produce an F1 generation that is heterozygous, right? One strand will be from the cultivar, one strand will be from the relative. Right? You see that as heterozygous? Then you just keep back crossing this offspring with another one of the cultivars in the hopes that by crossing over, eventually this gene will become part of the black strand. Remember crossing over? Well, that's going to take a lot of times, a lot of back crosses, and you can't just do several back crosses a day, right? Every time you cross the plants, you have to wait until they grow up. You have to wait another generation. So it takes many, many years to keep doing this and hopefully get a cultivar that is still intact, still has all the original traits you like, but also has this other one. But you can't control, because you can't control crossing over, you can't control whether or when this gene is going to make it into the plant's genome. Transgenesis skips a bunch of this uncertainty. So you have some unrelated organism that has the beneficial gene. You want to get that into your plant. And so it might not even be a plant that has the gene that you're interested in, right? It could be any organism. You don't want to transfer all the genes, just one. So what you do is molecularly manipulate this DNA to genetically engineer a plasmid, all right, that has that blue gene in it that you want to get into the plant. This plasmid is then put into agrobacteria by transformation. So now you have a genetically engineered agrobacterium carrying the gene temporarily, and you just let it infect the plant that you want that gene to have. That you want to have that gene, right? And so that's going to make that tumor. You grow the tumor up into a new plant. And it now skips all of these uncertain steps of back crossing. You have a plant that has that gene now. And so that only cuts out the uncertainty. It allows genes that aren't even plant genes to be put into plants, which you wouldn't be able to do, right, with conventional breeding. You can't breed a jellyfish and a plant together. Well, cisgenesis is exactly the same process. Like I said, the only difference is that the gene you're interested in comes from an organism that's related to the one you're putting it into. This one could have come from, you know, a human. This one would come from a different plant that's very similar to the plant you're putting it into. But the process is the same. So that's the difference between cisgenesis and transgenesis. All right? Any questions on those? All right, take a little break while I get the computers out. We'll hope the computers work for us.